This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, welcome back to the weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your host, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, I feel like things are turning around, man.
Things are turning around. We just had a chat before we went live, how the weather's starting to warm up where I'm at, which is a huge plus. It's just nice to be able to drive home and, you know, not have to deal so much with darkness. I was born in the winter, so I can handle it like Bane, but it feels nice to just, you know, drive home and still have some sunlight and get home sometimes when I don't have much more to do. And I can actually go out and, you know, maybe get that extra jog in or something and not have to worry about it being pitch black and whatnot.
Yeah, man, the sun is beaming on the West Coast. It sounds like you've got finally some decent weather back in the Midwest. We had a monster movie open over the weekend, yeah. So I feel like everything's starting to come together.
And let's just say, you know, it's the last time you and I ever doubt anything that Marvel puts out.
My gosh, man. No kidding.
That was embarrassing, the numbers we threw out there. We were kind of, you know, we were apprehensive, but I think we both had an incorrect belief that it wasn't going to get to what it got to, and here we go talking now. You know, we'll get to it, obviously, but yeah, I guess I can never doubt the power of some things.
Good, bad, or ugly, the power of certain franchises can just absolutely deliver. And we've even seen it where, you know, some cannot withstand the test of time. I think we saw that the Harry Potter franchise, or at least the spinoff of the franchise, might not be as strong as people had really thought with that bandwagon. But I tell you what, man, there's one franchise that I will never, ever bet against again.
Me either.
And we will certainly dive deeper into that. But before we do, we'll go ahead and start off the segment with some real news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
And looks like there was some stuff up in the air about Suicide Squad. I read an article about a few new characters that they'll be introducing, which, honestly, unless you're a diehard Suicide Squad fan, which I was not, the characters probably have no relevance to you, as they did to me. But on a more important note, Mark, you mentioned an actor that will be replacing Deadshot.
Yes, it looks like it's just about squared away. I think all that needs to be done is dotting the, you know, T's, crossing I's. I might have got that wrong. But Idris Elba, it looks like he is just about all but confirmed to take over the Deadshot role that Will Smith bowed out on about a week ago. Because we had the same news that came up last week, you know, during the pod. So, thoughts. What are your thoughts on Idris Elba, you know, taking the mantle as Deadshot in this next movie?
Well, I think you and I talked about the fact that we thought Deadshot and Will Smith was kind of we thought that Will Smith was a highlight of Suicide Squad, which was kind of a miserable movie, in my opinion. And I didn't think that Deadshot itself is a character that only Will Smith could play. I thought that Will Smith bringing his personality to the character is what made it so good.
Sure.
So big shoes to fill, I would say. I think they're going to take a very different approach to it because I don't think Idris Elba has the same unique charisma and liveliness that Will Smith brings to a role. And that's not a knock on Idris Elba at all. I think he's a phenomenal actor, and I'm a huge fan of his. I was behind him becoming the new James Bond, if that is still a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think he has more of a darker, brooding side to him.
That's what I was gonna get to, and this is not so much a criticism of what you said. I think that I think you gotta hit it right on charisma. If we're just talking about lightness and kind of, I don't want to say likability, because both guys are pretty well liked on both ends. But Will Smith kind of has this, I don't know if it's fluffiness or lightness or whatever you want
to
call it.
It's like he's going to be the genie. He's got like that right. side to him.
Right. He's, I don't know if this is even the wrong word, but like kind of non-threatening, where I see like Idris Elba, I think he's, 5-10 times the actor, like just pure thespian that Will Smith is. But Idris Elba, like you said, does have that brooding, kind of intensity to him that I don't really think Will Smith has. I think I'm very interested to see how this Deadshot, his version of Deadshot, looks in a Suicide Squad sequel. I do think, though, this is a huge opportunity for them and James Gunn, just to go a little bit darker. I think one of the main criticisms before was, you got all these, crazy nut jobs in Suicide Squad, and you're making it kind of like a tame PG-13. Not that we need to have, blood and limbs thrown out everywhere, but, this is... sounds like these are kind of adult characters. Let's make them a little adult. Let's make it a R-rated movie. Let's have a little fun with it. Let's get a little crazy. And I do think that Idris Elba, from his time on The Wire and other roles, he just does have that grittiness, that intensity. I don't know, maybe if I have the same chemistry that Smith had with Roby, but I just think upon like pure, grit and I would come back to the word intensity, I think he can bring a lot to this role that even Will Smith couldn't bring.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's supposed to be a master assassin. And if I were to put Idris Elba next to Will Smith and guess who is, a master assassin, the best shot in the world,
right?
I'd point to Idris Elba,
Yeah.
He just has more of a feel to it. So it might even be a more natural fit for him. So I'm excited for it. I think it should be a pretty strong casting. And to your point, I definitely think they need to kind of darken the material a little bit and not make it so light and, kind of comical, which they wound up doing.
Yeah.
If they deliver the feel to the movie that the first trailer had, I think that's exactly what they should be going for, and that's what the audience wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, then again, that makes James Gunn a pretty unique cast, casting as the director, because... I mean, the Guardians movies are just pure, goofiness.
Yeah, I think he should go for it. I think it would be quite the pivot from what he's done in the past if he can prove that, he can do a comic book movie, but doing it in a much darker fashion. I mean, everyone kind of hears the jokes about, DC has been too dark. But so I think we've seen the last couple movies, especially coming up with this Shazam movie, that, I think they've heard those criticisms and they've really kind of tried to make things a little more lighthearted and a little more jovial. I think now is the perfect time to maybe, not necessarily do a 180 again, but, maybe do another 90 degrees and come back and find like a, I don't say happy medium, but I would much rather see a second version of Suicide Squad, like you said, kind of hint at that darkness that everyone sort of wanted and expected out of the movie. Because if you've got one property, I think in DC that should probably maybe lean towards being a little more aggressive, or let's say two properties. The Joker is one, but that's existing in another dimension apparently. And the second would probably be Suicide Squad. So yeah. I think they should go all in and do something different. I know they're the Oscar-winning Suicide Squad, but a lot of people still don't have the a great taste in their mouths from the first movie. So let's keep some of the things that did work, like Margot Robbie, but let's kind of forget that movie happened and just do something different with the sequel.
Yeah, and they shouldn't be afraid to give the movie a darker tone.
Yeah.
I know people had gripes about that with some of the Snyder films, but if those had actually been good movies, people wouldn't have been complaining about how dark they were.
Right.
If you look at Christopher Nolan's, they're all pretty dark material. It's really somber and depressing throughout quite a bit of the movies. But people didn't care because they were really, really good movies.
Right.
So as long as at the core you've got a plot that intrigues people and characters that you're invested in, you can have a darker tone and still be a huge success.
Absolutely.
All right, so switching gears, Just happened to kind of run across something really quick. An article that Amazon had locked in the setting for its Lord of the Rings series, which I had no idea that they were making a Lord of the Rings series. Apparently, it's going to be taking place in the Second Age, which is a long time before Frodo and Bilbo and all the Fellowship of the Ring. And Mark, we mentioned this briefly before we hopped on here. I don't think either of us is a huge Lord of the Rings fan.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. It Middle Earth and that kind of whole setting, usually a whole bunch of times, just it doesn't really do it for me. I might find the occasional movie every now and then that does and surprises me. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I even really can't get into Game of Thrones that much. You know, I've tried, but it's just not for me. So everyone else kind of does their own thing. And I mean, everyone else is the entire world. But me, I've got HBO. I struggle to get into it. So, yeah, unfortunately, I mean, it looks like they paid a huge hefty fee for the rights, $250 million. But I know Amazon, I mean, they've got money to blow and they've got their own studios and they've come out with some, you know, really good movies over the last couple of years. I think a couple of them have been Oscar nominated here and there. But you know, as far as like the TV show, this, I'm sorry, it just doesn't really do a whole bunch for me, sadly.
Yeah, I'm not super excited for it. When I look at the movies, I think there's some unbelievable parts to them that I'm really locked into.
Right.
You know, like the big battle in Two Towers is amazing, but there's also so many aspects of the movies that are very slow, mainly when they're, you know, I think what you alluded to is the Middle Earth piece, which is like the two hobbits just walking for like three movies.
Yeah.
Which was famously parodied in Clerks 2. But yeah, I mean, it just, the certain dryness to the movies is where I kind of lost interest. So it was a balance back and forth. I was either dialed in or, you know, couldn't have been less interested.
Right.
I think what they're doing with the show is they're probably trying to capitalize on the success of Game of Thrones, and they see how into this subject matter people are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you break Game of Thrones down, it's almost like a, you know, more graphic and violent Lord of the Rings to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, like an episode or two, and that's really the vibe I got from it. You know, they get heavy in the mythology, but you know, they definitely don't skim on the blood and the boobs. So you know, it's just a mature audience's Lord of the Rings. You know, Tolkien piece. So yeah. You know, I guess this is great for people who are all in. I don't know how many seasons, or you know, if they've got like a production schedule already laid out. But I mean, I'm sure the opportunity is going to be there for people to you know, always have the Lord of the Rings fix.
Yeah, I imagine it will do pretty well, at least in the first few seasons, depending on, you know, I guess the storylines that they wind up going with, but. At the very least, it'll generate some interest for sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Mark, was there any other news we wanted to touch on?
I don't think there was a whole bunch. I guess the only other piece that I saw that was semi-interesting was the fact that it looks like it's another all but certain thing that's going to happen. We talked a couple weeks ago about Rush Hour 4 and how it looks like that's a possibility, though nothing's been squared away yet. It looks like that studio, Warner Brothers, wants to reboot Rush Hour in female form. So, you know, just gender swapping what had happened in the first movie, but, you know, making females the lead. I read that, and, you know, on one hand, I'm all for, you know, more representation, more diversity in all different ways, all different fashions. But another part of me says, you know, is this really the best way to achieve that? I mean, you're just taking something that's, you know, already been done and just, you know, putting on, you know, a different gender and just calling it a day and saying equality. I mean, where do you kind of lie on that spectrum?
I think it's a lazy cop out, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think, and like you said, I'm all for, you know, equality and diversity and trying to find, you know, new and unique ways to, you know, I guess, spread that message. And yep. I just feel like taking, you know, a dying movie franchise, swapping out the leads for females and saying that, you know, you're doing them, you know,
justice. Yeah.
Justice. I don't think that's really fair. Like, give, right. you know, make a new storyline, like create some new characters and actually put some thought and effort into it, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I didn't want to spend a whole bunch of time on it, but I read it and I saw there are, you know, I know people sometimes struggle for originality, but I feel like there are a thousand other different, you know, ways that, you know, we could have, you know, females actually do really, you know, fun, compelling, funny type of things as opposed to just, you know, getting something that, man, it's almost been, it is over 20 years now. It came out in 1998 and, yeah, just rehashing something that happened over 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's like they did the same thing with Ghostbusters, which, yep. you know, turned into a bomb. I think there's got to be some great scripts out there. Like, let's dive into something like that instead of just, you know, rebooting an old franchise.
Right, right. But that's about it, man. Not a whole bunch, but we definitely got into a couple different things, mainly the Suicide Squad. I did not think that was going to go that long, but that was a good good little talk there.
you would think we like really like the movie or the franchise to be, you know, back-to-back weeks talking about it this much.
Right.
I hope I do at one point. I hope James Gunn turns things around.
Absolutely.
But all right, well, with that, we will go ahead and wrap up the real news, and we'll pause for a few minutes to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
If you like intelligent and smart movie discussion,
Base is a zombie movie.
How did he write a book if he doesn't have an arm?
Or want to hear the latest news on your favorite actor?
Talk some Julianne Moore, I guess.
Whales have more films than Zoe Saldana.
Then check out The Lambcast, where no question is too risque.
Rachel, do you have a mouth?
Check out The Lambcast, the official podcast of The Lamb, the large association of movie blogs, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.blogspot.com. Si habla español.
Hola y bienvenido a la
Hello, everybody. This is Jason.
And Aaron.
And we are the hosts of the For Better or Worse podcast. Like most couples, we have pretty different tastes.
There's a lot of things we agree on, of course, but it can be pretty difficult to find something to watch at the end of the day.
She likes comedies, love stories, and dramas.
And he likes anime, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy.
So we both thought it would be fun to force each other to watch our favorite movies, shows, or anything else we can think of, and record it here for you guys.
The show is a lot of fun, and it's not always torture. Sometimes we actually come around to each other's side.
We would love for you guys to give us a shot. So download For Better or Worse anywhere you listen to your favorite shows and join us in the fun.
We can't wait to share our experiences with you.
All right, and we'll get back here to Cinema Recap. Your hosts, John Bonham and Mark Jackson. Mark, I'm going to go ahead and breeze through the 2 through 4 in the top 5 really quick, and then I'm going to let you run with the big number 1 spot.
All right, let's do it.
A, you were closer to your guess.
Yeah, up 2-1.
How much it would gross? And B, you actually saw the movie, so
that's fair.
It feels fitting. In number 5, Alita: Battle Angel, down to only 3.2 million domestically. Number 4 was The Lego Movie 2, the second part, which remained in the 4 spot with 3.8 million. Down one spot to number 3 was Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral with 12.4 million. And down one spot to number 2 is How to Train Your Dragon: The Hidden World with 14.6 million. Before we dive into the one, Mark, did you want to touch on any of those movies at all?
Unfortunately, no.
Fair enough. I will say that How to Train Your Dragon, I think it's put up some pretty monster numbers globally.
Yeah, isn't it, like, globally, yeah, for sure. And I think it's, you know, the top grossing movie if we don't count Captain Marvel, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's up to 436 worldwide.
Mm.
So, strong run for the end of the trilogy.
Extremely strong run, yes.
But without further ado, Mark, by all means, please kick it off.
Yep, so number one at $153 million is Captain Marvel. I think the official, the stat on this is it's the sixth highest Marvel grossing movie. I believe I have that right. I could be wrong, but third highest March opening of all time. And yeah, I feel like six is the number I heard. But, you know, John, you and I both, you know, had, I say, you know, tepid expectations for this one. And after coming out of the movie, I would say I'm still about at that tepid, maybe a little bit above. And let's get this straight. Neither of us expected this to be, you know, flat out bad or anything like that. We just didn't really have a whole bunch of, like, excitement to really want to, you know, get into it and care for much. I mean, we made the joke a couple times how we were much more interested just to see how it would all, you know, get us to Endgame. I guess that's where I'll kind of start, it getting us to Endgame. I will start in reverse and go backward, maybe.
Why not?
Yeah, so there are two end credit scenes in Captain Marvel, and one of them does deal directly with the fallout of Infinity War. And I don't want to get into a whole bunch of spoilers. It is rather quick, but ultimately, you know, we see the result of a Fury, you know, making that text to his save, I don't want to say savior, but, you know, a person that he's come to know very, very well and very deeply within the movie, that being Captain Marvel. So that gets sent, and, you know, she's there in a flash. So, like, she's ready to go. That probably was a little more of a spoiler than it needed to be, but that does show exactly how she gets to where she needs to be. She's going to be all in for the second battle against Thanos. So that's that. Okay. I thought it was a really good, you know, quick to the point mid-credit scene. You know, maybe I expected a tad bit more or wanted a little bit more just in, I don't know, seeing the aftermath and how that would get there, but, you know, it does its job, so I guess that's cool, and it's never a bad thing seeing, you know, all of the superhero greats, you know, converge, and then, you know, seeing another piece that they've never seen before, you know, come in and then being flabbergasted, so that's cool. The last actual scene has to deal with one of the scene stealers of the movie, Goose the Cat. He is a very, very comical character in this movie. Doesn't say any words, but he definitely steals a show in a myriad of ways.
Interesting. The cat.
Yep. Goose the cat. I think its actual species is like a Flurkin. That's something in the Marvel universe off of the comics. So, I mean, it can do a lot more things than a cat should or would be able to do. But, yeah, that definitely... That cat definitely does steal the show in a lot of ways. It's very cute, but it owns some screen time. I'll say that. And yeah, I guess we'll work a little backward here and finally get to the beginning. But one of the pieces that I really like about this movie, and I think he might be the best part of it, is actually Samuel L. Jackson, the DH Samuel L. Jackson.
All right. Like to hear that.
Yeah, he... he's got some really, really great lines. Nothing really over the top. I think he's the one character that, you know, gets the F-bomb in the movie. So if you are all in on him, you know, just cursing up a storm, you only get one F-bomb in a PG-13 movie. But he delivers it. He delivers it well. I thought what they did with the whole de-aging, it's apparently creeped out some people. I didn't really even notice it maybe after about a minute. I thought it was pretty seamless. I never really doubted it a whole bunch. It just felt like it was, you know, Samuel Jackson, just a little younger, but I never, like, I guess doubted or, you know, looked or said, wow, this just feels kind of weird. It feels kind of icky. I thought it was, a very, very cool, a very well pulled off, addition in the movie that, again, I never doubted. I took it for what it was and, It felt like it was a younger 1993, 94, 95 Nick Fury.
Okay.
So yeah, him, he's really great in the movie. And his chemistry with Brie Larson, that whole character, Captain Marvel, call her Carol Danvers, whatever you want to refer to as. And if you guys don't know anything, there is a weight that she gets to be how she is. But no, they had a really good dynamic. At times, the movie felt like a buddy cop movie. At times, it kind of felt like a sci-fi. At times, it felt like a comedy. At times, it felt sort of like a drama. So from time to time, it would feel like it was pulled out in a lot of different ways, but never really succeeding in any one of them. This is kind of more of a criticism maybe towards the first half, which I'll get to, but their chemistry, they have a really effortless chemistry about them. I think they worked on another movie. I don't remember off the top of my head what it was. I think they did Kong Skull Island.
Yep.
And I don't remember if they had a lot of, like, you know, one-on-one scenes together. It wasn't like they're in a love romance or anything in that movie, but you can tell they're comfortable with each other, and you know Larson's cutting it up with Samuel, and it's very free flowing. Sometimes the dialogue itself, not between them, but just overall, can be kind of forced. But I never really felt that aspect with those two, so that was a plus of the movie that I enjoyed. I could hear those two talk for a lot of it.
Okay.
And then just, yeah, again, working backward, I guess for me, the first third, the first half of the movie, I'll be honest, I really just wasn't into that much. Captain Marvel is not told. It's an origin superhero movie, and on that sense, it's still pretty basic, but it's not told in like a A, B, C, D, E fashion. It's told in a lot of flashbacks. I haven't written any pieces on it yet, but one of the contributors, Steven, to That Moment In, he had mentioned about, how that whole story goes in a couple different ways. How this is done is they tell a little bit and then they pull back. It's told a lot kind of in flashbacks, and we slowly but surely start to figure out who Vers, that's kind of, Carol Danvers for short. It's a whole reason how she got that name and how she finally gets to be what she is. I'm trying to avoid spoilers here, but it's very much told in flashbacks, and the storytelling can feel kind of fragmented, for like the first third of the movie, to the point where it's like, I don't know. I think this is going to kind of suck, but it did get better. There is a elongated kind of piece in the movie where they're looking for something, I think some records, and that felt very kind of buddy cop-ish. I really wasn't into that piece at much either, though I liked it a little better than like the first 20 minutes. I would say the movie started to turn for me in a positive way about halfway, when we finally figure out, this Kree versus Skrulls type war, and just who's in the right and who's in the wrong. For a long, long time, I guess I am kind of starting to get into spoilers here a little bit, but the Kree are positioned as like the noble warriors, and the Skrulls are like these shape shifting maniacs, and we've got to stop them any stretch and all turns. But you start to slowly figure out more about who the Skrulls are and what their actual end game is, and it kind of gets. It gets a little bit into a heartfelt piece. Ben Mendelsohn actually plays one of the main Skrulls, and he's usually really good at playing a villain. Here, he has a lot more to do. It's a lot more of a layered performance, so I thought he was great in it. At the end of the day, though, the villains themselves, they're always the weak point of Marvel movies. These aren't villains you're going to remember. They're better than the villains in Thor: The Dark World. I can't remember who those were. Do you remember?
The Dark Elves, I think.
Yeah, they're better than them, but I mean, they're still pretty disposable. Obviously, this is just an orange story, so you never really feel like Carol, Captain Marvel, is in danger any stretch of the imagination. It's very much a Discovery movie. I guess it's got a pretty good message. At times, it could kind of feel I use this word again, but forced. The movie takes place in the 90s, and it, for what they do, some of the song choices, it feels like it's just nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, as opposed to, you know, this is, there's a reason why we're doing this, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, you know, overall, I like it. I feel like I've kind of gone a lot of different tangents. Sometimes I haven't made sense. Overall, it's good. It's not something that I would rush out to see again. It's probably not something I would buy either, to be honest. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Brie Larson again. She's good in the role. I will say good in quotes. My takeaway overall was, like, do you remember how the first couple of Marvel movies with Captain America and Thor, and I guess you can kind of throw the Incredible Hulk in there, though they recasted. You remember how those two movies, like, they had the right guys for them, but they still felt like they were figuring things out with, like, just how they wanted to portray the role?
Yeah, absolutely.
I get that same kind of vibe with Brie Larson. I think part of it's kind of the writing, but I think part of it is also uncertainty on her part. Like, you know, it's a huge role to be stepping into, you know, something that $153 million worth of tickets,
yeah,
on opening weekend has shown. So, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. You know, at times I feel she's great in the movie. At other times, some of the acting can come off a little bit awkward. Some of the dialogue between her and another, you know, character that she's got huge backstory with. I don't know exactly what they're going for, but I do think, like, in time, once she gets more movies underneath her belt with this character, you know, she will make her own. So, it's kind of a mixed bag. I think she's good for the most part, but you can tell, like, you know, she's not... this character is not her yet, and there's still things you got to figure out. You know, it doesn't take one movie. So, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I guess the last piece that makes me a little bit disappointed in the movie, but again, I still like it, is just the action. I thought the action was mediocre, best, poor at worst. During, like, the climactic moments, there's some pretty good camera work. There's some pretty good direction, but, you know, there are just as many moments where, especially in that the first huge set piece, where it's very dark. You know, the action pales in comparison. You know, what we've seen with the Winter Soldier, I feel like that's still kind of the apex of Marvel action at this point.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, even Infinity War, you know, had some elaborate set pieces. You know, Black Panther was pretty good in spots too. Action-wise, I wasn't too impressed. Outside of, like, the final act, there's some pretty good, you know, shots there. But it did feel like, you know, two directors who, they've done really good stuff on the indie scene, but this is, again, their first time kind of taking on, you know, a huge blockbuster movie. So it's kind of tough to expect a huge seamless transition from, you know, indie to, you know, mega corporation Marvel movie. I guess those are overall my takeaways. You know, I've got one more thing to say, but you sound like you're going to hit something really, really fast.
Well, I was going to say, you know, in regards to the action for the movies, the Russo brothers just set such a high standard with Winter Soldier, and then Civil War,
yep,
and then even Infinity War. We're looking back at some of the early movies, like, you know, Captain America's pretty rough. You know, the action in Thor isn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
So they certainly set the you know, the bar high. So I don't think it's super surprising that Captain Marvel didn't quite live up to that standard.
Yeah.
Be curious to see how they utilize her in Endgame.
Same, especially since, you know, the Russo brothers are directing that. And I feel like they've proven they can do both, you know, sides. They can do, you know, something that's very souped up on CGI, but they can also bring it back more to, you know, practicality. I feel like just with the scope of and the amount of sheer characters that you have in Infinity War, you know, you have to lean more on the CGI. But I came away, you know, pretty thrilled and pretty impressed with what they did in, you know, the first Infinity War. So I feel like I don't see any reason why that would, you know, take a step back any stretch of the imagination. I guess my last piece, with, you know, with Captain Marvel is, again, this kind of comes back to the first half, but, it felt like a cohesion of a lot of different movies that did pieces better. And when I say that, I guess even the second half too in some areas, but you'll see some Star Wars, you'll see some Guardians of the Galaxy, you'll even see Blade Runner 2049 with kind of how they deliver, you know, some aspects of the plot and, you know, what the overall main character, Danvers, is asked to do, and she's trying to discover who she is. But, you know, those are all kind of movies I feel like, you know, did elements better than Captain Marvel did. So for the first, definitely the first half of the movie, it felt like it was kind of searching for itself. And then in the second half, when you kind of get a twist reveal, then it feels like it really starts to settle in. And I had a better time with the second half than I did the first half. And ultimately I leaned towards, you know, the optimist here, where I would recommend it just ever so slightly. I would not buy it. I don't even care to see it again, you know, in the theater. I don't even really care to see it again, you know, regardless, but it's not bad. And we didn't expect it to be bad. You know, we just didn't have huge expectations for it, or like huge desire, need to want to get to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like we said, our biggest interest was the fact that it's a Marvel movie and that Endgame comes out next month.
Yep.
And that first part, being that it's a Marvel movie, is something that I should have just gone with, you know,
right,
the natural instinct that all Marvel movies kill it.
Yep.
Especially this close to what's probably going to be the biggest movie of all time. So, apologies to the Marvel franchise for really undercutting Captain Marvel with our expectations, but
right,
won't happen again.
Won't happen again.
Before we move on, just one last question about the movie.
Sure.
How was Jude Law?
Jude Law, he was fine. That's very, very basic, descriptor. He doesn't have to try too much in this role. I mean, Jude Law's a uber talented guy. I feel like this, you know, role isn't really asking much for him. Jude Law can do a lot of different things. I feel like he can be the, he can kind of be the hero in some ways, but he also has that persona about him where, you know, he's kind of easy to root against, and, you know, this movie kind of leans towards the latter on that front. So he's, even when the movie doesn't immediately say this is who he is, you know, you just kind of get this vibe. He's kind of a douchey character. He's, you know, a little slimy. I don't know. I probably should be watching my eye out for this guy. He's fine. He's he's got this really, really fun monologue, though, with about 10 or 15 minutes left to go in the movie, that I was rolling at in the theater. Just how it's very physical. It's a very physical comedy moment. But, he's good. You know, that's all I really have to say. It's an easy role for him. I feel like he could do it in sleep a lot.
Okay, so nothing too special from Jude Law here.
Nothing too special. Again, that's not to say he's bad or, you know, deplorable.
Yeah.
I just feel like he could do this kind of in his sleep. It wasn't a hard role for him. Cash those checks. I'm sure he had a good time. Looks like he had a good time for the most part. And pretty simple.
All right. Well, good deal. And so that'll wrap up our box office recap. Not a whole lot coming out this upcoming week.
Coming soon to theaters.
I think what I'm most excited for is going to be released on Wednesday.
That's
which
right.
Which is Triple Frontier, which will be a Netflix release. And for those that are unfamiliar, even though I think we've already talked about this, this little picture is starring Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, Oscar Isaac, Garrett Hedlund, and Pedro Pascal, all as former Special Forces Ops team that reunites to plan a heist in South America. So, I mean, the cast is awesome.
Yep.
I think the trailer looks pretty solid. So I'm all in on this one. I'm excited to see what they produce here.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit from time to time, but I think both you and I are high on, you know, gritty crime, you know, heist type movies.
Oh, yeah.
I hope to get to this one on Wednesday. If not, it might have to be more of a maybe next week thing. But I hope that at least over the next couple of weeks, both of us will get to it. We might have a little bit to talk about at some point. But yeah, I share that sentiment with you. I am pretty excited just to have a an adult crime movie, a heist movie with a lot of different characters, and who knows how it'll go. So I'm all in.
I'm hoping for Heat in the Jungle,
mm.
but we'll see if that's what I'm rewarded with. Other than that, on Friday, a few releases, 5 Feet Apart, Nancy Drew and the Hidden Staircase, and Wonder Park, none of which I know anything about or really care to know anything about.
Yeah, so, all these movies are coming to add a little bit of, I don't want to say zest. Zest is the wrong word, but, it seems like they're trying to have something for everyone this weekend. Wonder Park is an animated movie. I don't know a whole bunch about it. I've heard that early pieces have it as sort of a poor man's Inside Out. I guess it's about this amusement park where this girl's imagination comes alive, and I'm still kind of unsure about what that really means. But that's one movie. It's animation. With how How to Train Your Dragon's going, though, I don't know if they'll have the juice to kind of take that number one spot. I feel like, with in the battle of two animated movies, families will go with like the known quantity. The known quantity is How to Train Your Dragon. Wonder Park, it's all good to see. It's all good for, again, original things, but I haven't heard a whole bunch about this. That plot summary doesn't really, tickle my fancy, so I'm with you. I don't know what to expect. I probably will not get to it. Then there's 5 Feet Apart. That's kind of like a romance in your Nicholas Sparks vein. I don't think it's a Nicholas Sparks movie or a script, a book. It's based on a novel by the same name of Rachel Lippincott. Apparently, both of these teens have the same illness and, cystic fibrosis, and that just they can't be like physically together. So there's a huge connection that builds, and what's gonna happen? Can they overcome the laws of physics or health and actually do something marvelous, or are they doomed to a life of not being together? I don't know, but I probably won't check this out either. Which leads us to my last movie, Captive State. I have had some interest in that. I will say, however, that the brief kind of the brief TV spots I've seen kind of bring down my interest a little bit. It's not, I don't want to say it's the movie that I don't want, but I've seen the second trailer. It looks maybe a little bit more, for lack of a better word, baseline and basic than I wanted. I kind of wanted something a little bit intellectual or questioning. I don't know if this movie's going to be it. I will still watch at some point. Not sure about next weekend because I've got a lot going on, but I don't know. Like, the more I've seen of it, the more like my intrigue has come down just little by little.
Man, this was one of your picks for like sleeper of the year, wasn't it?
It was. It was. I don't think it's going to do that numbers to, I guess, quantify as a sleeper. The only way I guess it could be a sleeper is if it, just killed on critic expectations. But I feel like this is going to be a movie that probably gets, if it's not good, it'll get forgotten pretty fast. But even if it is good, I can see, people kind of beating the drum for it. But it won't be in theaters probably in 3 weeks. That's just kind of the vibe I get from it. I will still check out, and my fingers are crossed, but the more I've kind of seen of it, as far as just, again, TV spots and, like, that second trailer, I just – my interest has come down just a little bit, just a little bit.
Okay. Well, one other one we got that I glanced over is The Highwayman, which is another Netflix release. This one's going to star Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner as a couple of cops that come out of retirement to track down Bonnie and Clyde. And because I'm so high on Kevin Costner, I'm pretty pumped for this one.
I'm just hoping that it's actually released on Netflix and it's not like a theater release this weekend, Netflix 2 weeks later, something of that sort.
I hear you.
But it's not uncommon that after a big, superhero type movie that no one else wants to put their movie the weekend after it.
Right.
Which is why there's really nothing the weekend after Endgame either. So not really surprising that we're seeing a bit of a lull this week.
Should we even make predictions? I mean, we know what's going to be number one, but should we even make a prediction for this week?
I think I'm good on predictions after my embarrassing performance last week.
Let's wait. It's definitely going to dominate this weekend. I can't see any of the new releases maybe, clearing 10, 12 million, if that. For some reason, if I had put money on one, I would probably say, I'd probably say 5 feet apart. I know that sounds crazy, but I feel like in the past there has been a precedence for, these romance movies to at least do like okay the first week. So I could see the teeny bopper crowd and that whole focus group getting out here and seeing that movie at least for this week. Captain Marvel's gonna dominate and it's gonna hold a lockdown at least until next week comes, and then we finally get Jordan Peele's new masterpiece. That's what I've been hearing.
Yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about with that one, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
But,
getting to know you, getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope you like me, getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea.
Well, yeah, before we wrap things up here, what we started doing is asking each other a random question on the spot about our movie interests every week, just to kind of, help people get to know our personal interests a little bit more.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to have a name for it. We're still working on it. But one of these days we'll have hopefully something, cool or short. Sweet to the point, all of it, but we'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, so then I can stop explaining it every week and just give it like a two-word title.
Right.
It'd be way better. So more to come on that front. But Mark, are you ready for your question of the week?
Let's do it.
All right. What movie has had the biggest impact on your love of movies and why?
Wow, that is a very, very strong question. What movie has had the biggest impact on my love of movies and why?
I had to seriously think about it.
Wow, man, that is something. Wow, I'm floored. All right, if I have to go and I have to put my name attached to something, man. Do I want to go semi-recent or I want to go really back to the past? Wow. I can answer this a lot of different ways, but, I guess I'll take it a little recent. A couple of years ago, I was just starting to get my feet set, in a new city. I had moved to Columbus, Ohio, in 2013. I had my first, big boy job. I wasn't making a lot of money or anything. But, I had my own place and I couldn't afford a lot of things, but I had a theater right across the street from me. And this is kind of how I've always been into movies, but this is kind of how I got back really in depth in the movies and eventually started my own website where I talked about my thoughts. But anyway, I live right across the street from a movie and or a movie theater. And I went to go pretty consistently because I didn't really have a whole bunch to do, after work and whatnot. But one of the movies that really stuck with me and it still sticks to me, this day of that year, and I'm just sad that it never got the Oscar love that season. It's a Denis Villeneuve movie, Prisoners. That's, I feel like, is a movie that put really him on the map. I think it was the second directorial movie after I'm zoning out on what came before it, Encendies. But anyway, I remember sitting in the theater. It was like a Monday night, maybe six. I went to go see it like 6:30. it was just me. I went by myself, as I usually do, but it was me and maybe 10 other people in this theater. But man, I can remember almost every second of that movie as I was watching it. And as I was going through like all the twists and turns, like you've seen the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tremendous movie. But, you know, as I'm going through it, I'm like, man, you know, why can't all movies be this, like, intense? Why can't all movies be this gripping, this well-acted, you know, this well-directed, et cetera? It's not a movie that I can really see many times just because it is so heavy. It is so dark. It's, you know, yeah, kind
it's,
of...
It's a hard watch, for
it's,
sure.
It's kind of unnerving, but, I mean, I think it's almost close to perfection. I think it's one of the decade's, you know, best movies, and he's had a lot of them, you know, just in this decade. I'd say at least two or three that you can put in that stratosphere. But
absolutely,
you know, after I came out of that movie, you know, I just kind of want to tell everyone about it. Like everyone, people have to see this movie. I think it got to number one in its box office that weekend, but you know, it didn't do massive numbers. But you know, it was just one of those things, like, you know. Everyone needs to know about this. Everyone needs to talk about this. I would say that kind of brought me back to, I guess you can call it maybe my second act of movie love. Because a couple of months after that, you know, I launched my my website movieManJackson.com, and I, you know, really started committing to trying to get my thoughts out, because you know, this was something I felt passionate about, and I kind of credit that movie for, you know, at least, I don't know, you can say instilling that in me. And again, mm-hmm. I could answer that question in a lot of different ways. There's four or five other movies where I could probably pull from my childhood or maybe as a teenager that really resonated with me. But if I keep it relatively current, I just remember everything about that movie, where I was at in the theater, kind of what time. I still have the movie, the ticket stub, and how I felt immediately afterwards. And I was like, yeah, this is why, you know, I think I want to start doing something with movies, or at least, you know, letting people know how I feel about them, because this, it got to me. That movie got to me for sure.
All right, man. That's an awesome answer. The movie that inspired you to get the website started. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that was not expecting that that answer or that question, but it was unpredictable. So, you know, kudos to you on that. I have to step up my game, because I feel like the first one I did, it was right for the episode, but now I gotta feel like I've gotta, you know, take some time and ponder this one, and you know, get you something that can maybe get your gears turning a little bit.
Yeah, man, catch me off guard.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, man. Well, I think that's about it here. Anything we can expect from you this week on thatmomentin.com?
I'll be honest, guys. This week might be a little bit tough. I posted a what to watch for, you know, Major League yesterday. Your favorite. Oh, I don't want to say your favorite baseball movie, but it is your favorite team, the Cleveland Indians.
It's
so
up there.
Mm-hmm. You guys can read that. Yeah, I don't think I might be able to get anything immediate this week. Next week will probably be a little easier in getting some things out. But yeah, this week it'll be kind of hit and miss. We'll see. I can't commit to anything, but you know, keep your eyes peeled. You never know.
All right, good deal. And yeah, we're kind of up in the air on if we're going to be able to squeeze in a podcast next weekend. So TBD, at the very least, we'll get one the week after once Us is released. But no, otherwise, it's been great, and we appreciate you guys joining in this week.
That's right, guys. Have a happy St. Patrick's Day if you do not hear from us. And yeah, be safe. Be responsible.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.